everyone. I'm Sam.
And I'm Sean.
And this is Key to the Case. Welcome back. Thank you all for tuning in this week. So we decided to stick with our summer schedule, putting out episodes every other week for the time being. This schedule seems to work a lot better for us, but if we can get back to putting out episodes weekly at some point, we definitely will. All right, let's dive into today's case. Kelly Moriarty was 38 years old at the time of her murder in 2011, and Doris Carter, who went by Pat, was 61 years old at the time of her disappearance. So for the rest of this episode, we will refer to Doris as Pat. Kelly grew up in Millbrook, New York, with three older brothers, and she was described as the best athlete in the family. Kelly began playing softball as a child, and when her family moved from New York to the St. Petersburg area of Florida for her dad's work, she picked up where she left off, joining her high school's softball team. As Kelly neared high school graduation, she received various scholarship offers from universities and visited some of these schools, but ultimately decided she was ready to be done with softball. After high school, Kelly wasn't sure which direction to go. She worked different jobs and studied a range of subjects, but nothing felt quite right. Kelly's family has characterized her as bright, a lot of fun, and independent. And from what I could tell, Kelly's independence really stood out as one of her defining characteristics. Kelly came out to her family the year after she graduated high school, and they were accepting. However, Kelly kept most of her relationships private. In fact, when Kelly began dating 61-year-old Pat Carter, she'd often respond to questions from her family about Pat with, "Why do you need to know?" Kelly and Pat met at a gay bar in St. Petersburg, Florida, 2 years before Kelly would be murdered and Pat would disappear. Kelly's family only got to meet Pat one time during that 2 year period, and they suspected part of why Kelly was so private about their relationship was that Pat was older. She was 23 years older than Kelly. So Kelly's family thought Kelly might have been sort of embarrassed about that aspect of their relationship. Although the Moriartys had only met Pat once, they got a good impression and thought she seemed to really care about Kelly. Pat was married for 3+ decades to a Hillsborough County, Florida sheriff's deputy. He died in 2005, 4 years before Pat met Kelly. Pat and her late husband owned a cast net business that appeared to be quite successful. And after his passing, Pat continued to run the business. According to her brother, she was exceptionally skilled at her work, and their products were sold not only across the United States, but also internationally in countries like Japan and Taiwan. When Pat began dating women after her husband's death, her family was a little surprised, according to her brother, but Pat told her brother that she was happier than she'd felt in a long time, and she appeared to be quite happy in her relationship with Kelly. Now, according to Kelly's family, Pat was very serious about their relationship from what they knew, whereas Kelly may have been considering ending it. We talked a bit about how Kelly struggled to find a career she was passionate about, but before her death, she had taken classes to become a massage therapist and had recently gotten licensed and became board certified. Kelly hoped to move back to New York to start her career there, but it doesn't sound like Pat was a part of that vision, although there were no definitive plans yet.
So was Pat aware of this potential move back to New York?
This information came from Kelly's family, so I'm not totally sure. They wouldn't know probably if Pat knew or not about Kelly thinking about moving back to New York. So I'm not sure if Pat knew. It seemed like she was pretty set on her relationship with Kelly. So I can imagine news like that would be devastating. And the other thing is, I learned this, right? But when the women disappeared, they seemed to be spending a lot of time together. So it could be that Kelly threw this out there and was thinking about it, but maybe wasn't super serious about it. So that's why I emphasize that there were no definitive plans yet on Kelly's part. Kelly lived in Bradenton, Florida, south of Tampa and St. Petersburg, where she previously lived. And Pat lived on a large property in a rural area in the northern part of Plant City. Their homes were nearly 60 miles or 96 kilometers from each other, so they lived around an hour's drive apart. Kelly was at Pat's home on Friday, December 16th, 2011. And Crime Watch Daily reported that, according to Pat's daughter, who also lived in her mom's home with her husband and daughter, Kelly and Pat had been arguing that night. The last time Stacy reported seeing Pat and Kelly was sometime between 10 p.m. and midnight. Stacy recalled that when she awoke the next day, December 17th, Kelly and Pat were both gone along with Kelly's car. Some sources even say that Stacy saw them drive off together. Weeks passed and no one had been in contact with Kelly or Pat. Kelly's family was used to long stretches without contact from her, even though they all lived in the same general area, or maybe not all of them, but quite a few of them lived in the same general area. Kelly tended to keep her personal life to herself and wasn't in frequent communication with her family. It wasn't unusual for her to go several weeks, even over a month, without returning a call. Given that Kelly was 38 and highly independent, her family didn't see this as cause for concern right away. That's why her lack of communication over the Christmas holiday didn't immediately raise any red flags. She had spent Thanksgiving with Pat, and during a phone conversation in December with her family, Kelly mentioned that she had had a good holiday. Her parents simply assumed she had opted to spend Christmas with Pat as well. Still, after the holiday passed, they made several attempts to reach her. When there was no answer and her phone eventually went dead, concern began to set in. According to Kelly's brother, Brendan, their parents became increasingly convinced that something wasn't right.
Even though Kelly had this reputation of not communicating with her family for long stretches, I do find it interesting that even around the holidays, a red flag wasn't raised quicker, even just a quick phone call saying, hey, I'm going to spend the holidays with Pat. I won't be at the house for Christmas or whatever. I find it interesting that, like I said, a red flag wasn't raised quicker when, you know, the holidays passed and they had heard nothing from her.
I believe when they spoke after Thanksgiving, Kelly had mentioned that she might be spending Christmas with Pat. So since she had thrown it out there, I think that was already in the back of their head when she didn't show up. So it sounded like she could drop by for Christmas if she wanted, and her not being there was somewhat anticipated. So not an entirely unexpected event, but I understand where you're coming from. In most scenarios, this probably would be cause for concern. But right around that time, their worry started to set in. So this is later in January. Brendan received a call from the property manager of Kelly's apartment complex on January 27th, 2012, 6 weeks after she and Pat were last seen. Brendan was Kelly's emergency contact, and the property manager reached out regarding Kelly's failure to pay January's rent. She was almost an entire month late at that point and hadn't contacted the office about her situation. This was completely unlike Kelly. So combined with their inability to get in touch with her, they were certain that something was wrong. Brendan visited Kelly's apartment, and when he entered Kelly's home with the property manager, it appeared undisturbed. But it also looked as though time had paused in the previous month because Kelly's Christmas tree was still up with gifts wrapped underneath it, and there was milk in the fridge that had expired in December. And I understand that some people leave their Christmas tree up for weeks after the holiday, so That detail alone doesn't necessarily mean Kelly hadn't returned to her apartment after December 16th, which was the day she was last seen, but the unwrapped presents under the tree and expired milk feel more telling. It suggested she never got the chance to give the gifts out, which aligns with the fact that no one reported spending the holiday with Kelly or Pat. So this detail would later help refine the timeline regarding when something happened to Kelly and Pat between late December 16th and just before Christmas. Bothered by his observations, Brendan reported Kelly as a missing person to the Bradenton police shortly after going to Kelly's apartment. After Brendan reported Kelly missing, the police made the logical next step of going to Pat's house. At that time, Kelly's family didn't know that's where she was last seen, but they knew that Kelly and her car, a car that Pat had purchased for her, were nowhere to be found, so she could be with Pat. When the police showed up at Pat's house, her live-in daughter, Stacy, answered the door. Stacy explained what I've already laid out, that she last saw her mom and Kelly on the night of December 16th and that they had been arguing that evening. Stacy allegedly told the police that it was typical for her mom and Kelly to leave for long periods, so she hadn't thought too much of their absence, even though the holidays had passed with no word.
I suppose I have a couple questions. The first being, where would they usually go for these long periods? I'm assuming trips or whatever, but yeah, I guess I'm just curious where, if they had a typical spot they would usually go to or something like that. And then the second question I have is, what would be considered a long stretch of time without seeing Pat? Is 6 weeks in the realm of possibility?
Apparently 6 weeks was plausible because she hadn't taken any action to report her mom missing at that point. And as far as what they would do during these long periods where they would go away, I don't know exactly. I think that would be a question for Stacy to answer. And I know they would spend time at each other's homes. So Kelly would visit Pat, Pat would visit Kelly for different periods, right? But as far as where else they would go, I don't know.
I feel like Stacy's point of view on this whole thing would be more critical than Kelly's family's point of view, right? Just based on the fact that Stacy lives with her mom, so she would be seeing Pat and Kelly a lot more often than Kelly's family would be seeing her or Pat, right?
Yes, exactly. I thought about that too. I think between looking at the families, if we were to expect one of them to know something is wrong sooner than the other, I would think it would be Stacy, just because, like you said, she lived with her mom. So she would have known that her mom was absent, whereas Kelly's family didn't necessarily know that she was unaccounted for. And we know Kelly's family had been trying to call her, but I'm not sure if Stacy had been trying to contact her mom during that period. The visit to the house appeared to prompt Stacy to take action. She reported Pat missing to the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office the day after the police showed up at the residence. The police had their work cut out for them since there was a 6-week period between when the women were last known to be alive and when they were reported missing. They couldn't find anyone who claimed to see either of them after December 16th. So if someone harmed Pat and Kelly, they had quite the head start. The Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office led the investigation since they were last seen at Pat's home within Hillsborough County. Early on in their investigation, they learned that Kelly's car had actually been recovered on December 20th, 4 days after they were last seen. Kelly's car was found abandoned on State Road 62 near the unincorporated community of Parrish in a rural area nearly 40 miles or 64 kilometers from Plant City. Manatee County Sheriff's deputies found the car and placed a red tag on the window, instructing the owner to move the vehicle or it could be towed. Kelly's car was impounded by Manatee Sheriff's deputies 9 days later on December 29th, as it hadn't been moved. Little did they know that the car belonged to a missing person, since Kelly hadn't been reported missing at that time. Now, it is possible they attempted to contact Kelly as the registered owner of the car, but we know that she wasn't answering calls. So if they tried to call Kelly, they definitely didn't get a response. Kelly's family was shocked to learn that her car had been found abandoned. It didn't match her typical behavior. They believed that if she had experienced car trouble, she would have called AAA, reached out to a family member, or even contacted the police if no one else was available. So now, three law enforcement agencies were involved: the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office because of their last known location, the Bradenton Police because Kelly lived in Bradenton, and now the Manatee County Sheriff's Office due to Kelly's car's location. Kelly's car was examined and found to be in working order with no mechanical issues. It was fully drivable. There was no evidence to suggest that Kelly had pulled over because of car trouble. The investigators retrieved various items from Kelly's vehicle, though the contents have not been made public. From all indications, the car provided few, if any, meaningful leads. So as the investigation continued, Kelly and Pat's families were in communication to an extent. It seems that the strongest relationship Kelly's family developed was with Pat's brother, who I've brought up a couple of times now, but they talked with Pat's daughter, Stacy, and her husband, Anthony, a little bit too. According to Crime Watch Daily, Kelly's family was completely taken aback when Stacy suggested that Kelly may have killed her mom. They were just astounded by Stacy raising this possibility, and I imagine it caused some tension between them. At that time, Kelly's family was not jumping to the conclusion that Pat had harmed Kelly, because it could be looked at that way too. Maybe it crossed their minds, but to hear it the other way around was pretty jarring. That theory was quickly disproven, and in an unexpected way. 11 days after Kelly and Pat were last seen, on December 27th, 2011, a group of Canadian tourists passing behind a residence near the Bay Vista Recreation Center in South St. Petersburg, Florida, came across a human limb lying among the sand and rocks at the edge of Tampa Bay. Once they realized what they had just discovered, they reported their finding to local authorities. Law enforcement has shared that this limb was someone's calf. It was pale and it had been cut cleanly at the thigh and ankle. The police believed the dismemberment required a deliberate and extensive effort. They estimated the limb had been in the water between 1 and 3 days when it was found. So sources vary on that detail, but definitely no more than 3 days. When remains are discovered under such circumstances, it's standard procedure for law enforcement to comb through local missing persons reports, and they did just that. Still, weeks passed without anyone connected to the recovered leg.
Right, because at this point, neither of them have been reported missing.
Exactly, yeah. This was December 27th, so they didn't know at the time of the discovery to consider looking into the disappearances of Kelly and Pat. And once they were reported missing, they went back to this limb. But Kelly and Pat were both white, and they believed the leg belonged to someone who was Hispanic. So that caused another delay. But they finally decided to collect DNA samples from their families despite this mismatch. And it was a good thing they did, because on March 23rd, 2012, nearly 3 months after the tourists found the severed leg, it was identified as belonging to Kelly. Kelly's family was devastated to learn that she was deceased. And with the evidence that a cutting device of some sort was used on the leg. It's been hypothesized that a hatchet was used to sever Kelly's leg. It was clear that this was not an accident. The medical examiner classified the manner of death as a homicide, as reported by Crime Watch Daily. I can tell you now that the rest of Kelly's body remains missing, and her family has spoken over the years about how difficult that has been for them. Knowing that all they have of Kelly is this one part is bad enough, but to know that someone or multiple people dismembered her is extremely disturbing. And the investigators have been unsuccessful in establishing where her body was dismembered. Kelly's family already felt confident that she did not abandon her car. So that thought was cemented when they learned of her dismemberment. Kelly's family theorized that the person who ditched her car did it to cause confusion. And by involving another law enforcement agency because of its location, maybe they could slow down the inevitable investigation. And now, with the discovery of Kelly's partial remains, additional agencies became involved. All in all, the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office, the Bradenton Police, the St. Petersburg Police, the Manatee County Sheriff's Office, and the Sarasota County Sheriff's Office all took part in this investigation. I don't think we've ever covered a case with this many law enforcement agencies involved, and it certainly complicated matters. Despite locating Kelly's partial remains, there was still no sign of Pat, and there were some questions about Pat's position in all of this. Was she a suspect or a victim? But I think these questions subsided as time passed. The Plant City Observer reported that Kelly and Pat's cell phones last pinged on December 16th, when Stacy last saw them, about a mile north of Plant City. As you might recall, Pat lived in a rural part of Plant City, so it's possible the last pings occurred when the phones were inside the home or just in the general vicinity. The phones were either shut off or dismantled after the last pings. So initially, there was this kind of large time frame in which something could have happened to them, but it got narrower knowing that all phone activity ceased the night they were last seen on December 16th, and then Kelly's car was found on December 20th. Kelly was likely killed during that period. However, it was estimated that Kelly's limb had only been in the water for 1 to 3 days when it was found on December 27th. So was she kept alive by her killer for some time? Or maybe she was killed on the 16th and someone stored her body somewhere until they dismembered and disposed of it? Or maybe she was alive for a few days after the 16th. There are several possibilities here regarding the timeline. The deeper investigators delved into Kelly and Pat's relationship, the more apparent it became that they had a bit of a turbulent history. According to reporting from the Tampa Bay Times, in April 2011, 8 months before the women disappeared, Pat filed a restraining order against Kelly, alleging that Kelly had pushed and threatened her during an incident at a bar in St. Petersburg the two routinely visited to dance. Pat also accused Kelly of stealing her wedding ring from her previous marriage and claimed that during their time living together, Kelly pressured her to spend the money left by her late husband on her. The filing noted that Kelly owned a handgun, which became a point of concern and led to an order for her to surrender the weapon. The injunction was temporarily granted, but later dismissed. But then 2 weeks after this, Kelly turned around and filed the same injunction against Pat. Kelly claimed that it was actually Pat and Pat's friend who pushed her against the wall aggressively at the St. Petersburg bar. Kelly alleged that Pat was abusing prescription medication and drank to excess. She said Pat owned many firearms and knives. Now, some sources indicate that Kelly requested the injunction to be dismissed because a hearing date conflicted with her work schedule, while others state it was thrown out by a judge for lack of evidence. In either case, it was dismissed. So we have a she said, she said situation here. And the reality, the truth was probably somewhere in the middle.
So between April and December, they were still dating.
Yes. So it seems like whatever went on between them in April and May, they resolved that. But that wasn't all the investigators learned. There was conflict in Pat's life, specifically with her daughter, Stacy, and Stacy's husband, Anthony. In 2009, 2 years prior to Pat's disappearance, Stacy and Anthony lost their home to foreclosure. Pat subsequently allowed them to live in her home, but records show Pat was growing tired of their presence in her home. In October 2011, 2 months before Pat vanished, she filed a complaint for unlawful detainer with the Hillsborough County Circuit Court. She wanted Stacy and Anthony to be evicted from her property. In a handwritten document, Pat wrote, quote, "I, Doris Carter, request my daughter, Stacy Meralt, husband Anthony Meralt, and granddaughter to vacate my premises immediately due to an extended length of time undesirable to myself that these individuals have been occupying my residence," end quote.
Yeah, I'm assuming Pat tried to just have a conversation with them to, you know, see if they could find a new home to so they could move out and not live with Pat anymore. But it seems the situation got pretty bad for Pat to go straight to the courts for this.
I agree. Most people would attempt to resolve this on their own. And yeah, I imagine Pat tried to, but clearly it didn't work. And despite Pat's objections, Stacy and Anthony reportedly wished to continue living in her home.
Do we know like the main reason Pat wanted them to move out?
In an interview with Crime Watch Daily, law enforcement described Stacy and Pat's relationship as confrontational. Hillsborough County court records show that Stacy was arrested for domestic violence against her mom in 2009. Additionally, sometime before she disappeared, Pat petitioned for an order of protection against Stacy and Anthony. Pat claimed that she would lock herself in her bedroom because she feared Stacy and Anthony. Pat described an incident where Stacy pushed her out of a chair and drained her wrist and thumb. Pat dropped the petition 12 days later. Anthony allegedly told the police he hated Pat and Kelly. So you can sort of see why Pat would want Stacy and Anthony out of her home. It sounded like a pretty hostile environment. On December 15th, 2011, a judge ordered Stacy and Anthony to vacate Pat's property. This day is significant because it was the day before Pat and Kelly were last seen. With Pat and Kelly nowhere to be found, Stacy and Anthony stayed in Pat's home. And you might recall that they were at Pat's home when law enforcement visited for the first time before Pat was reported missing, more than a month after a judge ordered their eviction. And look, if my mom were trying to evict me, I don't even know what scenario I'd be in where that's happening, but if she were, and a judge approved it, and all of a sudden I didn't see her for weeks the day after that, I would be very confused. If anything, Pat should have been spending more time at home if she thought Stacy and Anthony were going to leave because they had been ordered by a judge to do so. Stacy and Anthony were cooperative during the beginning of the investigation, but when the detectives began asking probing questions about the eviction and their relationship with Pat and Kelly, both chose to invoke their right to legal counsel. And from what I could find, there's been very minimal communication between Stacy and Anthony and the investigators since then. This has been frustrating for law enforcement because they have quite a few questions they'd like Stacey and Anthony to answer, particularly about some of their actions after Kelly and Pat were last seen. Shortly after Kelly and Pat disappeared, cell tower data showed Stacey's phone pinging repeatedly in South Tampa and St. Petersburg and the area surrounding the Gandy Bridge, the same bridge that crosses Tampa Bay where Kelly's leg was ultimately found. Now, I understand Tampa Bay is quite large, but it's worth noting, and I don't believe Stacey has explained those pings since she hasn't been speaking with the investigators. Then the detectives gathered surveillance footage from Pat's bank, and 3 days after the women were last seen, Stacey was captured on camera visiting her mom's safety deposit box and removing whatever was in the box.
Yeah, that's an odd thing to do considering Stacey said that her mom would take these long trips away from home. So why would she be removing something from the safety deposit box if, you know, she thought her mom was going to come back?
Yeah. At the very least, her mom's going to return, go to her safety deposit box at some point and realize whatever was in there is missing and be pretty upset. So yeah, I think this action is highly suspicious, and I haven't seen any sort of explanation for it.
And now I'm questioning the validity of Stacey saying that her mom would leave home for long extended periods of time. Like, was that even true?
I don't know. And that's why earlier I was saying, I don't know where they apparently go or how long they're gone for. Yes, I know her mom was not home 24/7, but yeah, this whole notion of that Pat spending time away with Kelly, I don't think there's a lot of validity to it. According to Kelly's father, who spoke with Crime Watch Daily, Stacey and Anthony pawned valuables that had belonged to Pat and her late husband, including jewelry and firearms, after the women disappeared. After these discoveries, Pat's assets were frozen.
So after hearing all this backstory on Pat's side of the family, specifically with Stacey and Anthony, that comment that Stacey had made when the two families had first met makes it all the more interesting. Like, no one had been talking about one or the other killing each other. And Stacey throws out that, oh, maybe Kelly murdered Pat, my mom. That just seemed way outlandish at the time. And now hearing all of these issues and, you know, the tension between Stacey and her mom, it definitely seems like an even crazier statement to make.
Yeah, especially since we know Kelly's dead. Someone murdered Kelly. So yeah, for the suggestion to be the other way around, Kelly's the only known victim in this case. Now, Pat is believed to be a victim as well, but looking at that statement with hindsight, yeah, it's certainly even more shocking than it sounded from the beginning. In October 2012, 10 months after Kelly and Pat were last seen, the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office searched Pat's home. I read that Stacey may have given consent for the search as well as a subsequent search, but other sources indicate that a search warrant was executed. What may have happened, and I can't say for certain, is that although she offered consent, investigators obtained a warrant anyway, possibly due to questions about whether Stacey had the legal authority to consent. Since Stacey was not the homeowner and had been ordered to vacate the property by a judge, her standing to authorize a search may have been legally questionable. The sheriff's office left Pat's home with several bags of potential evidence, and forensic technicians used luminol throughout the house to detect traces of blood that may have been cleaned up. If they collected any notable evidence, it appears it failed to advance the investigation significantly, as this case remains unsolved. Stacey participated in a phone interview with the Tampa Bay Times in 2014, where she denied being uncooperative. In fact, Stacey insisted that she was the only person who had her mom's best interest in mind. She alleged that her mom's attempt to remove her and Anthony from the home was orchestrated by Kelly, whom she accused of manipulating her mother in an effort to gain control of her financial assets. Stacy and Anthony's position was that Kelly was to blame for a lot of what happened with Pat. We may never know the full truth, as Pat is not here to share her perspective, and neither is Kelly. But there could be some merit to what Stacy is suggesting, given that Pat once filed an injunction against Kelly. Although it was ultimately dismissed, the filing included financial accusations that may lend some weight to Stacy's claims. The challenge is what I was just talking about. Regardless of any tension or conflict between Kelly and Pat, Kelly was ultimately murdered. She is a victim in this case. That makes it difficult to assess the relevance or intent behind Stacy's accusations or how they're meant to factor into the larger investigation. In the interview with the Tampa Bay Times, Stacy said she has her own theories about what may have happened. While she declined to share specifics, she implied that the case may have involved drugs. Yeah, this felt like it came out of nowhere, and without more information, we can only speculate about what she meant. But even that's hard to do because the only mention of drugs in this case was when Kelly alleged that Pat was abusing prescription drugs. So we don't know what the drug tie-in could be here. During that interview, Stacy said, quote, "I know 100% that I was not involved in this. There's so much more to this than anyone understands. I know I love my mother and I know it's my place to protect her," end quote. Kelly's family and Pat's brother have been open about their suspicions of Stacy and Anthony. I looked into Stacy and Anthony's background. Stacy doesn't have much of a criminal record that I could find. She had the previously mentioned domestic violence incident with her mom, but that's about it from what I could find. But Anthony was charged with grand theft of a motor vehicle in 2016, as well as repeat violence of the domestic kind in 2003, but it appears that was dismissed. But I found something else that I thought was really interesting. So stick with me here. So in 2000, 11 years before the women disappeared, William Carter, who was Pat's late husband, and I believe Stacy's dad, his obituary says he was her father, went through the courts to evict Anthony Meralt, who we've been talking about, and Stacy Nelson, who I believe is the same Stacy we've been talking about this whole time. I presume that was a previous partner's last name. This was 5 years before William died. Now, the case was ultimately dismissed for lack of action. William filed it and then failed to take the necessary next steps. But I just found it interesting that William and Pat requested to evict Stacy and Anthony at different points. And Stacy had suggested that Kelly was to blame for the 2011 incident. So who was to blame in 2000 when Kelly wasn't around? There just seems to be a bit of a pattern here with these requests for eviction of Stacy and Anthony. According to Pat's brother, who spoke with Crime Watch Daily, Stacy may have objected to Pat's relationship with Kelly out of concern that she would lose her place in her mother's will, and he doesn't have hope that Pat is still alive. Kelly's dad, Bud, sadly died in 2019. This was upsetting to learn. He was so proactive about Kelly's case, he never gave up. He had binders full of information related to the case. And to know he never got answers is gut-wrenching. In a letter to the editor of the Tampa Bay Times, Bud wrote that he believed Kelly and Pat may have been placed in a heavy fishing net and disposed of in Tampa Bay. I don't know how exactly he arrived at that conclusion, particularly the part about the fishing net. I mean, we know since Kelly's partial remains were found in Tampa Bay that that makes sense, but that was his theory, at least at the time of writing that letter. Kelly's family and Stacey have expressed frustration with the investigation and lack of progress. Over the years, the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office has contacted outside agencies for assistance, and they've retested items of interest with negative results. The latest information I could find is that two cold case detectives are handling the case, but Kelly's family has been highly critical of the investigation overall and the lack of action. Pat Carter is described as a white female with brown hair and hazel eyes. She's 5'1", 110 pounds, and would be 75 years old today. She has a surgical scar on the right side of her abdomen and a tattoo of a cross with wings on the back of her neck. If you have information related to the murder of Kelly Moriarty or the disappearance of Pat Carter, please contact the Hillsborough County Sheriff's Office at 813-247-8200 or call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-873-TIPS to submit a tip anonymously. I hope there's someone out there with information. There aren't a lot of ways to look at this case. It's either that Stacey and Anthony had a hand in this, or there's something else going on here. There was something else between Kelly and Pat, or they were involved in something that we don't know about, or this was a completely random killing. And I think where most people listening to this will go back to is Stacey and Anthony. What did they know? Thank you all so much for tuning in this week. That is all for now, but we will be back in 2 weeks with a new case. Bye.
Bye.